Greetings, fellow gamers. This is Daniel Quick, TD Gaming Podcast regular co-host across 2012 and 2013. Congratulations on 10 years of the show. Game on!
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 455, recorded on February 1st, 2017.
Welcome to the 455th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 288th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jordan Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashbacks.
Well, that's actually not true, because there was going to be one, but the fourth news item actually... No, see, last week we had a gaming flashback...
The flashback was that I was here.
The gaming flashback The gaming flashback last week needed Paul because it was the first one in a very long while and it was about City of Heroes.
Aww, City of Heroes.
I know.
And the thing is...
it's sad.
There was an article by somebody who covers the death of MMOs and he talked about the entire history of City of Heroes, and you know what, Paul? I'm going to have to send you the link because it'll make you misty and nostalgic.
Why would you do that to me?
I don't know. But
because Jonah's mean. He's a masochist.
But the thing is that it was really heartbreaking when he talked about how subscribers to MMO really wanted City of Heroes, and they sent NC Soft things like bouquets of flowers and donuts and pizzas. You know, all these personal things sent to the corporate headquarters to try and convince them to have it survive somehow. I don't know.
That's brutal.
I'm pretty sure the secretaries had ate well that week, but the thing is that one thing I said on the podcast was that if there's one thing about Paul that is the number one part of his personality, everything about him can be summed up with three words as a description, and that is freedom of expression. And that's what City of Heroes did that. City of Heroes, that's why it was popular, because it was freedom of expression, because it was the first MMO that I can think of that had that level of customization.
Well, it had its rocky patches too in there, let's not forget.
But one thing I did not realize, because I stopped playing like halfway through its life, was that they kept up the updates. They kept them all up. As a matter of fact, when it was canceled, they had the 24th update ready. It's like it was one of the few MMOs that actually listened to people and actually gave them content that was useful, and it wasn't microtransaction derivative, that sort of thing.
That's true. I did complain enough, and they gave me what I wanted.
And then I beta tested Champions Online. I was like, no, that's not me. It wasn't the same as City of Heroes. I should have gone back. I don't know. But I know that Scott was complaining that no one will ever be able to play it because it's an MMO.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
Yeah, that was... I'm here. That's a really sad... One of the sad aspects when these big games, they close down and no one will be able to experience that game. You know, future generations won't be able to experience that game, except for maybe YouTube videos or something.
Ah, but that actually gets into one of the news items. And it actually speaks directly to what you just said, Scott. So
Yes, I know.
That's foreshadowing, folks. That's how we foreshadow the rest of the episode. So keep that in mind as we go on. So anyways, Paul, what have you been playing since... Out of all of us, you haven't really reported what... you've been playing the new game of being a professor.
Yeah. I'm playing the new game of being a professor at Full Sail. It's awesome. Hello?
Yeah, there. What happens is that you got lagged. I don't know what you're using, but...
Yeah, a little robot-y.
Yeah, but... So you can repeat what you just said. I'll just edit it all.
Yes, I've been playing the awesome game of moving cross-country and starting my new job at Full Sail as a professor.
Well, associate course director, technically.
Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
And you're in Florida.
Now I'm in Florida. Yes, they told move to sunny Florida, they said. Meanwhile, it's like 30 degrees outside.
And, yes, cold and wet and miserable.
And the ironic thing is I'm planning to move to LA, so it's like we're going in different directions, literally.
And I've also been playing Escape Room Addict like a crazy person. No, scratch that. I'm just addicted to escape rooms.
Wait a minute. What is that? I haven't heard of that.
You haven't heard of an escape room?
No, we're talking about a computer game, right?
Crawl back under that rock.
Wait. This is a computer game, right? Or a game?
No.
Oh, are you talking about those live things in which you're in a room with a lot of people and there are clues and you have to figure out how to escape?
Yeah, they lock you in a room for an hour full of puzzles, and if you solve them all, you get out.
Oh,
otherwise,
okay.
You get murdered.
I know that. As a matter of fact, I auditioned to be a host of one of those here in New York. I didn't get it, but, you know, it's interesting. I know exactly, you know, like, you have this code here. What does it mean? Oh, it means do this with the door. Oh, wait, no, you have to do this before you... Yeah, I get it.
Okay.
So do they change the puzzles on you? How often do you go...
Me? Oh, Jesus. I think my, the height of my compulsion, it was like 35 rooms in the course of 18 days.
Wow. Did they update the rooms that quickly?
No, that's part of the problem, is that you have to keep finding new venues.
Oh, okay. So it's big in Florida.
Most venues have anywhere between, like, 3 and 6 rooms. Like, I can't even tell you how many of the ones I've already done down here in Orlando, because I've lost track.
Have you been doing any other types of actual video games?
Video games? Those are so passe. Yeah, I'm sticking with, let's see, Disney's Enchanted Tales, Disney Magic Kingdoms. Let's see. Oh, the Smurfs. The Smurfs Disney, Epic Run.
Those Disney games, are they made by people you know at Disney, or?
Oh, no, they're all licensed out to third parties.
Ah, okay.
Let's see, what else? Oh, Lego Dimensions, obviously. Duh.
Hey, there's a question for you. Since we last had you, they weren't here the last time you were here. So what have you gotten any new expansions or, you know, figurines or what do they call them again?
Packs.
Yeah, I know.
For lack of a better word.
You have packs, but you also have the big ones that have large level content.
Right, story packs.
Right, story packs. That's what I was thinking of.
Or level packs, or fun packs, or team packs, or really packs. Kind of is a good catch all.
Hey, you know that TJ was at PAX South, so he had his own packs.
I didn't get any packs at PAX.
There ain't no amiibos anymore. Dun, dun, dun.
There are amiibos.
I got the Fantastic Beasts one.
Wait, what was that? Is that a show?
The one that came out and tied with the new movie?
Oh, right, the by J.K. Rowling, the new J.K. Rowling thing. Oh, okay, yeah.
God, I've been so busy unpacking. Gremlin, Sonic the Hedgehog. Which of the ones did I get?
They still sell amiibos. They have Animal Crossing amiibos, and I got a Link one. And
yeah, but they're no longer supported. That's the problem.
Yeah, I have to get a
wait, seriously?
Scan.
That's lame.
You can still use them.
Not that I heard.
I had to buy a little $20 scanner to translate the amiibo to the 3DS that I have.
Yeah.
Did your 3DS come out before those?
Yeah, it's the older 3DS. It's not the new 3DS.
Yeah, I'm actually really concerned about what's going to happen to my Lego Dimensions when the Switch comes out.
Yeah, it seems like you have to rebuy games, and I know we talked about it in the last episode about the Nintendo Switch and their practices for what people have to do when they get a new console, and they don't allow you to like transfer purchases. You have to buy the stuff new.
Well, I'm not against buying like the main software again. I mean, I kind of like to not have to, but I'm not against it because, you know, it was a new SKU. They didn't plan on releasing it on the Nintendo Switch when they made it. So, you know, obviously there's more development money that goes into it. But it's more like, how am I going to move over all my saved games from the Wii U to the Switch? Things I'm going to need to look into.
All right, that's the rub. I mean, now we have cloud saves on stuff like Steam and the Xbox One and the PS4, so that suppose I want to get the Scorpion. Well, I don't have to worry about my save games because they're all in the cloud, and when I just, you know, when I get the Scorpion, I'll just download everything, and it'll be waiting for me. But, yeah, I don't. The Wii U doesn't have cloud saves, does it? So.
Well, but they do have network downloads for all the new seasons, for the new second-year content. So it's like it's none of the stuff is actually like on the figures. It's, you know, when it detects that you have a figure, it downloads all of the appropriate content.
So have you been playing any mobile games lately, Paul?
Yeah, I just listed off a whole bunch of them.
Oh, I didn't even know those were mobile games. I thought they were like console or PC games. Oh, okay.
Oh, no, all mobile games. Oh, although I will say a new fun little entry is called Seven Mystic Words. And it is not a very flashy game, if you will, as like there's no like giant animations or anything. But it's a really thought-provoking word puzzle game.
Okay, I always like weird puzzle games. Those are fun.
Because, I agree.
You know, I mean, I still play. Oh, damn it! Oh, not. You know, I'm embarrassing myself because all of a sudden I can't remember the name of the game. it's been around for a while too. Damn it! It's like on the tip of my tongue, and I was playing it yesterday. You know, it's the one in which you battle other people, battle the computer, building words and these little things that are throwing words at each other. I know I'm going to remember it sometime. I just have to pick up my iPad and look. So, what have you been playing, TJ?
I mean, I played a lot of stuff this last weekend, but I'll try to keep it to maybe two of them. I was at PAX South this last weekend. Huge indie showcase. I played a lot of upcoming stuff. I guess if I was going to have to pick a couple of the ones that were my favorite, I'll start with Dauntless. Dauntless was rad. So this is from Phoenix Labs, and they have some people that have worked at BioWare, Riot Games, Capcom, and Blizzard Entertainment. And the top line on it is that it's a lot like a Monster Hunter for a PC. You craft your character, and your character's style is determined by whatever weapon they're wielding. And you group up with three other people and hunt down freaking dinosaurs. And I love it. It's on these floating islands in the sky, and you'll like pick a target at the beginning of a scenario. And you'll go on the hunt, and it plays out a lot like a Monster Hunter like hunt. You have to damage it enough; it'll go into enraged states, have all these different kind of move sets.
Multiplayer?
What's that?
Is it multiplayer?
Yeah, it's entirely multiplayer. The point is, you go on these hunts with three other players to sort of. And you also sort of have your own style and use each of your strengths and weaknesses to try to bring this monster down.
That sounds like a really good game to play.
Yeah, and Monster Hunter is cool, but I always regret never getting in on the ground floor because it's so freaking complex with all the tips and tricks and items and little things that you can do. And you have to, like... It's one of those games that you have to, like, study if you're going to play nowadays.
See, now, I was going to say, Monster Hunter sounds fun, but Monster Eater sounds better.
Well, I don't know if any... I think that would sort of be like Evolve, but I don't know.
Evolve died lately, so let's have a moment of silence for Evolve, which was an interesting idea that was completely botched by Turtle Rock.
Yeah, poor Evolve. We knew ye so little.
From what I understand, Take-Two was part of that, forcing them to do microtransactions and all that stuff, which I think may have borked their game. But it was also horribly imbalanced too.
Mm-hmm. Wraiths. That's all I gotta say is Wraiths.
Well, not even Wraiths. I'm talking about the game itself. It wasn't very interesting.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about balance. Wraiths are the most horribly made monster of anything. They're the most horribly made enemy of anything I've ever seen in any game. And I've seen a lot of crap, but Wraiths are just like, there's something to be said for a enemy that can teleport on top of you and then just maul everyone in seconds. But Monster Hunter has always been those things that I wish I could have gotten in on the ground floor of that before it got really complex, and Dauntlet seems like that opportunity, and I'm really interested to see where they go with that.
I know we could always, all of us get it and try it out if it's gonna have
definitely player. Yeah, and that's four cool players idea. So that would be really fun.
I looked at it. It looked like it would, you know, be an interesting thing to play once.
I looked at Mystic Words, and it looks interesting because what Paul didn't tell you is that you actually have clumps of letters of 2 and 3, and it gives you hints of what the word you're looking for is. That's
yeah, it's kind of like a word jigsaw puzzle, but with like all square pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. Like you have, if say the answer is spring, you have an SP here, an RI here, and an NG over there.
Next one up, I'd love to talk about is Monster Boy, and
that the spiritual successor to a certain NES game?
It's a spiritual successor to Miracle Boy,
I thought it was Alex Kidd in Adventure.
It's Miracle Boy. And actually not even a spiritual successor. They actually have the guy who created Miracle Boy working.
It's a spiritual successor if he doesn't have the license.
Well, yeah, I mean.
That's what it was with Mighty No. 9 and Yooka-Laylee. They both are not, they both don't have the license, so it's not the same characters, but it's in the same vein, I guess.
Except for this one, it is almost the main character. It's pretty much Miracle Boy and everything but name. It was really beautiful. It's like it's a luscious little side-scrolling platformer, Metroidvania style. It's so very. It reminds me a lot of Shantae. Just it's very colorful, and the characters are just so lush and pretty. I am a sucker for good art on any sort of side-scrolling platformer, and Monster Boy is just cute as all hell.
Now, which one of you played the original game?
I have played some of Miracle Boy on the Game Boy, but not too much past that.
And Scott, what have you been playing aside from Minecraft?
I've been replaying Pillars of Eternity because Pillars of Eternity 2 has been released on Fig. And
well, not released. It's been announced.
Yeah, it's been announced. That's what I mean. And they have, they've gotten their money. And they've gotten
from
their goal. And I really wanted to, I mean, watching the trailer for what's coming made me want to replay the first game again and do all the choices, because apparently your choices that you did for those characters are going to matter and roll over into the next game, which is very exciting, I think. So, yeah, I've been replaying that and having fun with it. The game definitely it feels more polished now that I'm replaying it going through. I don't know if it's because I have a better card, but there's like little effects that I really enjoy. The walking, like I walk through a forest and I see little like seed umbrella things flying around, or little fireflies, and just dust in like dungeons, and it just looks really nice and fleshed out, I think.
You know, it could be that you have automatic updates, right? So it could be that it was patched in.
Yeah.
Because a lot of games are constantly upgrading themselves. Like when I play Animation Throwdown, there's a lot of little changes that happened. It's like, you know, although that game is meant to be changed on the fly. I mean, I did not finish Pillars of Eternity, so I may have to do it again. I will probably not be backing it this time because I already spent the $810 on Psychonauts 2. And that's going to be, we're going to stay on that.
I'm looking forward to actually backing Pillars 2 because they have the statue you get with the Elite. The Elite Collector's Edition has the statue of Nuda, figure of the dungeon. And that looks really cool. And plus, you get a mouse pad and a print of the art, concept art and soundtrack and all sorts of cool stuff.
I'm not a fan of statues. With the $810 I did with Psychonauts 2, I'm getting a Raz plushie and a book bag, and additional plushies for each of the characters that are in it. Yeah, I want my teddy bears or plushie or Psychonaut bears. Those I can deal with. I can't deal with these big statues because where am I going to put it in my messy room? I'll just have the Raz plushie on my pillow. And I'll wrap my diary.
It works for you. I'd rather have a statue.
Well, you also have that pin. Oh, here's the thing I forgot to ask. Did either of you complete Tyranny?
I haven't yet.
Nope. I haven't either. I have to finish that, too.
Yeah, I was wondering because for those of you who've been following this podcast, I sent Scott a little pin, a little lapel pin that I got from E3. You know, it was really well made, too. You know, I wish I'd stolen another one of the bags so that I could add two of them, but I just took t-shirts and sent those out instead.
And Jonas, stealing is wrong.
Well, it's not stealing. You know what? Here's the thing. I was at the PC. It was at the PC convention, right? And you know, people like Cliff Wozinski was there, and Richard Garriott was there, and all that stuff. And there was like five rows of 30 seats or like 150 bags that were not claimed. So no, I mean, they were expecting to give that crap away. So I just took another one. I should have looked in the bag first because all I was doing is taking the t-shirts because that's what it would have been in demand. If, had I known, I would have gotten, pins for everybody, including myself. But you know, I decided Scott was the good one who's going to be appreciated the most. So I sent it to him along with the Civ 6.
Yes, thank you.
The Civ 6 pen and diary.
I have a collection of the pens now, and I have them on my holding bag, and so now I can at least display them.
You're displaying it for everybody.
Yeah.
As for me,
I did something with them.
Yeah, I downloaded the Long War mod for XCOM 2, and while they did the same amount of work on that. And there's there's so much that I'm trying to figure out, you know, because there are so many new classes and so many new weapons and all that stuff. But the problem is you have 8 people on your missions, and that's too much. It's become a clusterfuck when you do battles, and that's not fun. You know, I would have preferred they kept it at 4 people, expandable to 6, like you do in normal XCOM. But no, so. Sometimes more is not better. It's just more, you know?
Yeah.
So I
came from the days like in Final Fantasy Tactics, you'd have like, what, 10 people on your party? No, it depended on the mission. But yeah, I agree. The more you get, the more complicated it is and the more pieces of the puzzle you have to manage. And sometimes having a little bit less is a much better experience. I'm one of the ones that really enjoyed like having the 10 people in the original XCOM, but I can appreciate what we get with like XCOM Enemy Unknown, where it's just 4 dudes that you manage at any given time, or 5,
up to 6,
depending.
Up to 6, you can expand it up to 6. you know, one of the most popular things about Gears of War multiplayer is that you only have four to a team. And that's it.
You know? Mm-hmm.
And good, focused multiplayer can be really exciting. And also a lot more personal. Because the same person keeps killing you over and over. You know, it's not going to be some random dude in Battlefield, which, oh, blah, 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 XX3, Thor, you know, those long, elite names, you know. No, no, your friend just chainsawed you, and now you have to go and hunt him down. And he's only one of four enemies, so it's easier to do. And speaking of which, I've really gotten back into Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 in a big way. Because I'm finding its multiplayer is far better than any multiplayer out there right now. Far better. And, and it's a shame no one knows about it. Because it's all cute and cuddly, you know? You don't have guns. You have a plant. Or you have a zombie. Well, the zombies do have guns. And you also have Gatling peas, but you know what I mean. It's like, it's cutesy, but then again, it's also extremely strategic, because my favorite character to play as a zombie is the Imp. The Imp has only 75 hit points, and he's very, very vulnerable until he gets his mech, but before you have your mech, you have to survive, and he has a ball that he throws that can force enemies in levitate helplessly, you know, sort of like target practice, and he has a spin attack, and surviving as an imp when you're in your weak state is so satisfying, especially when you help teammates, because you're sort of like using your ball to say, pull, and they go up, and it's like they're target practice for your teammates now. And I've really stopped playing Halo 5 multiplayer. I mean, Halo 5 is only good for single player for me now. It's like, yeah. So, yeah, all of you out there, play Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. It's fun. Anyways, we've been going long about this because we have four people instead of three. So we're going to go to the first news item, and go ahead, Paul.
Father of Pac-Man, Masaya Nakamura, dies at 91, and this comes to us from BBC News. The founder of the video game company Bandai Namco, which released cult game Pac-Man, has died at the age of 91, the firm announced. Masaya Nakamura established Nakamura Manufacturing, which went on to become the Nakamura Amusement Machine Manufacturing Company, Namco, in 1956. He started out installing two electric horses on the roof of a department store in Japan as amusement rides. He was known as the father of Pac-Man because it was a Namco release in 1980. The game was developed by Churo Iwatani, and in 2016 was named the highest grossing arcade game of all time by the website US Gamer. Mr. Nakamura was an honorary advisor at Bandai Namco until his death on January 22nd. He was awarded the Order of the Rising Sun, a Japanese government honor, in 2007 and was inducted into the International Video Game Hall of Fame in 2010.
Created entire. Now, the thing about he said that he was inspired by a pizza, which isn't entirely true. Actually, it was part of it. The other part was that, the Japanese character for eating is a box, so they just rounded it out and made it eat. So that's how Pac-Man came to be. Paku Paku Man, named after his. That started an entire generation, what's called a genre of games called the maze game. I remember playing Pac-Man in the arcades when it first came out. Wow, that's really old.
What other maze games besides Pac-Man?
Oh, Ladybug, Mousetrap, Gorf,
Burger Time.
Well, yeah.
Are you sure these are words you're saying, Jonah, or are you having a stroke? Oh, I'm just saying you're so old. You're the only ones that's heard of these.
Oh, okay.
I haven't heard of these games.
Ladybug is one of my favorite games, in fact. It was done by Universal, the same people who did Mr. Do. And the thing about that game was that there was no way to turn the tide against the enemy insects, and they were faster than you. But there were revolving doors, and you really had to figure out how to do the revolving doors to do it. I mean, there's plenty of... Amidar. For those who remember, that was the one with the ape, and you were a rolling brush, and it And it started with the Alfred Hitchcock theme. No, that was Pepper 2. I'm sorry. Pepper 2 was that game in which you're a paintbrush and you're boxing in things. Yeah, there were a lot of those types of games. And, of course, you know, it led to a cartoon. You remember that, right?
No.
Nope. I think you're alone in that one.
Bullshit, Paul. I know you watched that one. And it also had a video game in which Pac-Man was it was a side-scrolling jumper.
Yeah, there have been a lot of weird Pac-Man spin-offs, I will say.
And we're still.
I think my favorite.
Go ahead.
What's that?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think my favorite bit of classic trivia about Pac-Man is that it was originally meant to be called Puck-Man, but there was concern in the American market about vandals turning that into something else.
Yeah, well, that was because the noise that Pac-Man ate was Paku 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 Paku. That's why they named it that.
Well, no, they were afraid that if they
called it Puck-Man. I know what they were afraid they were going to call it. I'm just telling you that's why it was named that in the first place, though. They're still coming out with Pac-Man games, too. I mean,
yeah, they just released, or the latest one was, I think, Pac-Man 20 or 256, and I played that, and it is, oh god, I love it. I mean, there's no substitute for just a good idea, and
for those of you who don't know, Pac-Man 256 is you're basically playing Pac-Man. However, for those of you who don't know. Level 256 in Pac-Man would cause the game to glitch out, and you'd see all these random characters. In Pac-Man 256, that's exactly what happens. You have this advancing wall of doom, which is basically the game glitching out, and it's chasing you. So not only do you have to worry about the monsters, but you also have to make sure they keep going up, because down below, there comes this glitching trying to kill you as well. So it forces you into constantly moving forward. The other thing is, if you eat 256 pellets, you get a nice little bonus. And it's very hard to do consecutively because there are gaps, right? So you have to make sure that there's no gaps in the pellets. And it's hard to do, but it is rewarding.
Yeah. That, and you can play with three other players in it at the same time. And it makes for a nice chaotic, frenetic time. Just when everybody.
And if all of you eat 256 pellets in a row, then you form the Mechazord.
or you become
Mecha Pac-Man.
Or you become Judy Garland if you eat 256 pills in a row. here's the thing. Pac-Man was revived totally by Pac-Man Championship, which was amazing when it first came out. I was like, wow, they took Pac-Man and they made it really interesting. And that started an entire spate, didn't it? It started the new Galaga, the new Space Invaders, the new, you know. They showed maybe those came first, but it's just, you know, these old arcade games do have value if you know how to reboot them right, you know, and you acknowledge that they're not big games. You don't have to turn them into a big game. Just make them, you know, because here's the thing. All the arcade games were basically mini games. We didn't know it because games weren't that sophisticated. Look at Space Invaders. That's a mini game. That's a mini game. You're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, you know. Pac-Man is a mini game. It's a maze mini game, you know? I mean, Geometry War feels like a retro game because it's basically a mini game. Well, here's the thing, Paul. I'm not saying it pejoratively. I'm saying it's a gameplay mechanic that's done well, you know? And you can, you know, when you exploit that gameplay mechanic, you can expand on it while retaining that gameplay mechanic, which is what Pac-Man 256 did. It kept the old thing and just added a new element. The fact that you couldn't stay still, you know.
Well, I just think it's perhaps a little dismissive to call them mini games.
It's not dismissive. It's a fact.
Is Tetris a mini game?
Yeah. It's one gameplay mechanic, just one.
Jonah Falcon, all your taste is in your mouth.
You see, but the thing is, maybe I shouldn't call it a mini game because here's the thing: Gary Kitchen, one of the best programmers of the old Atari 2600. Had an iOS game in which you bounced planets into holes, right? And it's great, but it's the same thing over and over and over again. You know, look at Kaboom. Actually, I wonder if Kaboom is a reverse breakout, isn't it? Anyways, We'll have to talk about Kaboom someday. But here's the thing: okay. you seem to make. I'm not belittling it. I'm not saying anything bad about it. I'm saying.
You know.
Go ahead.
There is some level of like truth to what you're saying, though. I mean, they. Interestingly enough, Namco Bandai were the ones who patented the loading screen minigame in which they would put little versions of Pac-Man and Dig Dug on their in between loading screens on their games.
And they fucking fucking trademarked it so no one else could do that.
Yep.
which is a crime in my eyes.
Everybody just has to have boring crap on their loading screens.
I mean, not, some people got away with it. No. I mean, games like Assassin's Creed allowed you to practice your moves while the loading screen was going on.
Symphony of Night, you have a tunnel that you're walking through, and it actually has, and it's loading the next area as you're walking through a tunnel. I remember that. And there was some game where you could play with the word loading, and you spin it around on the screen. And also on Skyrim, you can move the model around, both in that one and in Fallout.
Yeah, that's not the same thing though. What's it called? They copyrighted an entire game. No one could put a game inside their thing. They could manipulate stuff. Like I said, Assassin's Creed allowed you to run around with Ezio, or Altair actually. But these things had actual games in them. So it'd be like playing Tetris while you're waiting for Skyrim to load, or something like that. One of the things I love is that someone did create Bejeweled for World of Warcraft. So it was like a tool so that while you're waiting for your stupid ride to go, you could play Bejeweled while you're waiting. You know. So we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Hold on, it's refreshing. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Nintendo is gearing up for more mobile games, plans two to three per year. This is from Reuters. Nintendo said today it plans to release two or three mobile games every year, a day after Japanese video games maker disappointed investors with a one-third cut to its full-year operating profit outlook. Nintendo President Tatsumi Kimishima also said in annual business strategy briefing that 70 game makers are developing 100 titles for its Switch game console, which is to be launched in March. Previously, the company said more than 50 game software makers were developing 80 titles for the console. So that sounds a little wishy-washy there. They really should be releasing more games, I think, if they want to get the Switch really going.
Activision is releasing one game, and that's Skylanders.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if LEGO Dimensions is coming to the Switch, which would make it a more attractive purchase for
It is not. We're still licking our wounds over that one. I don't want to talk about it.
What? For LEGO Dimensions?
LEGO Dimensions is not currently announced for the Switch. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Sorry to hear. I'm pretty sure Warner Brothers will at some point make it. I mean, here's the thing, too. Do those figures for LEGO Dimensions work on all iterations of the game? Obviously they do. That's a stupid question.
They do.
Yeah. So if it ever does come to the Switch, at least you have all your little, you can just, you don't have to worry about buying them over again.
Yeah, well, I mean, now Nintendo's just going to have to actually, entice me into upgrading.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way, Paul.
So, do any of you play Super Mario Run?
No. I just picked it up recently. It's fun. I like it.
I do not play it as a form of protest.
Protest? Wait, roll back here, Paul. What protest are you doing?
Well, obvious? for anyone who isn't familiar, Mario Go has a lets players download the whole game, obviously, and play the first three levels for free. Before saying, nope, if you want any more, you got to give us $15.
Whew. You see, but that's only $10 for me.
Maybe the price came down since I saw it, but it's still fantastically expensive for that space.
Well, I mean, that's par for the course for Japanese, but it does allow you to race against your friends as much as you want. and earn mushroom. Damn, what is his name again? The mushroom guy.
Buddha Toads.
It allows you to earn toads that way. You know, different colored toads. I don't have a problem with it because to me, basically, it's just a demo until you unlock it, like XBLA used to do it. Yeah, $10 may be extreme, but here's the thing about that. There's absolutely no microtransactions in the game. So basically, you're not paying for microtransactions. You're just paying to unlock it. And I will tell you, most of the microtransactions on games I do play that I like, I've spent $30 on. So there's that. I mean,
I just don't think they're giving me enough of a taste of it to warrant like a super heavy price point when you consider all the other products that are out there.
That price point?
I'm sorry?
Were they upfront about that price point? Because it doesn't sound like they were. I didn't get that impression.
Actually, no, I don't think
so. No, not when you download it at all.
No, it's on iTunes, I believe it says free, but it has that asterisk, which always says in-app purchases.
Right. They offer one in-app purchase for like $15, which is the entirety of their game.
$10. But, you know, like I said, if it doesn't have microtransactions, I think I'm okay with it. I still haven't bought the full game yet. Yeah, I haven't bought the game. Like I said, you know, they're doing the soft sell, basically, not the hard sell that most microtransactions do. Basically, they're saying, well, you know, if you like this game, pay $10. But, you know, you don't have to pay to compete against friends on the levels that are unlocked. You know, that's completely free, and you can still make
the first three levels.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like enough. I felt cheated.
The other thing is that I still haven't completed those levels perfectly, though. That's extremely hard to do because you have to get. See, in the game, you have the red coins, then the purple coins, then the black coins, and I've only gotten to the purple coins at the very first level, and for that, I've only got four of them.
Yeah, I got bored before them.
Okay. Well, the thing is that also, that's the other thing. If the game isn't for you, at least, well, you don't have to pay the $10. You know, I think the first three levels are enough to let you know if you want to buy that game in the first place, which is why I consider it a demo. You know, but I can see why you're annoyed that they have a high price on it, Paul.
I mean, like on Kingdom Hearts, I must have dropped like almost $100 on that game already.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you still interested in Kingdom Hearts 3, Paul?
Yes, and as soon as it comes out, I will purchase a copy.
Okay. I don't know when that's going to be, but okay.
I don't know when that exactly. I don't know when that's going to be, but, you know. Someday, I've been told.
Let me ask you another question, Paul, about the story of Kingdom Hearts. I know you've complained that it doesn't really evolve that much, does it? The story? I mean, you're complaining that they keep on telling the same story over and over.
I think you might be confusing where I say that they keep having the player go through the, you know, the classic Disney movies, like, as they already exist. So it's like, oh, we're going to help Alice get bigger and smaller and chase the white rabbit. And while there's, you know, while there's some, like, fun nostalgia over that, you know, for one game, it just seems to be kind of the same thing over, like, the entire series.
You like the main character?
Sora, yeah, he's fun.
I was just wondering, because there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, whatever. They're not thrilled with that character. I know they're supposed to release Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, or at least the latest iterations of both, because that's probably, I think that's something else that annoyed you. Oh, look, it's Kingdom Hearts 2.8. What? You have games with decimal numbers in that series.
Yeah, because they're supposed to fall in between in between the first two, or before the first one, or just after the first one, to the second one, before they get to three. It's like trying to remember where each game goes if your brain works in coding in BASIC, and you're stuck with like 10 CLS.
I thought you were gonna say 10 go to 10.
It's like 10 CLS. Oh, no, wait. We forgot. Go to line. We need a line 5. Put something on it so that we have something to clear.
By the way, for those who don't know, CLS is the basic code for clear screen. It's a programming joke, and we have to make sure that everybody gets it.
Okay.
So is there any Nintendo property that you think would go great on a handheld? Not a handheld, but a mobile.
Yeah, I think Mario Go would have been great on mobile.
Okay. Aside from the one that's been released. Aside from the one that's been released. By the way, Paul, do you like Endless Runners as a whole?
I think the Smurfs Epic Runner is awesome.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to check it out. I mean, I'm definitely going to check out Mystic Words, thanks to your forcing me to check out on the store what it is.
Yep, 7 Mystic Words. That's awesome.
Actually, it's technically Mystic Words, and there's a big 7 as a logo. I don't get that, but I don't know why they would do that, because if you search for 7 Mystic Words, you can't find it. But if you do Mystic Words iOS, it shows Mystic Words, and it has the 7 on the logo. Is it say 7 Mystic Words in the game itself?
The splash screen just has the number 7 behind the word behind the phrase Mystic Words, and there's always 7 on each level, so I thought that's what it was called.
Well, it still looks entertaining, so I'm gonna probably check it out.
It's extremely.
So getting back to my initial question. Of the properties that Nintendo might release, are there any that, you know, I saw this game. There's this game being advertised, which is about monsters and all that stuff, and it has Pokemon music, but they're not Pokemons, even though they say Pokemon. They're Astromons. It's like they're stealth releasing a Pokemon game without calling them Pokemons, but still using the same damn music and the same kind of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this game? Anyways.
Yeah, nope. I sometimes see it advertised on YouTube. It looks like it's Pokemon and everything but name.
Like, but they still say Pokemon on it. They still say Pokemon in the damn trailer itself. And they have the Pokemon music. It's not like the Pokemon music in the style of Pokemon. No, it's the friggin' Pokemon music.
You know what I find weird is...
That would be Zelda.
Yeah. I actually did Zelda instead.
What I find weird is Ni No Kuni has Pokemon mechanics. They don't call them Pokemon or anything, but they have Pokemon mechanics where you capture these monsters and have them fight enemies and train them up, and they have elements, and so it's like, and you even have a storage bin, and I guess you can call it Pokédex or whatever, where you can collect all the Pokemon or all the monsters. And I have no idea how they get away with using that mechanic that's so clearly Pokemon.
Oh, have you ever have you ever played Dragon Warrior Monster Ranchers, which was Enix before Square took them? They had the same thing. Yeah, it's not an unknown mechanic. As a matter of fact, go ahead, Paul.
From my learned collegiate viewpoint over here, it's a little known fact: you actually can't copyright a game mechanic. You can only copyright art assets, like music and visuals. Anything as far as gameplay, you can't copyright. So that's one reason why there's so many clones of successful games, like a Match 3 game.
But you know what's funny?
You can't copyright the thought of lining up 3 of the same thing.
But you know what the funny thing is? Here in the West, we really haven't done that with Pokemon. You'd figure... I mean, World of Warcraft did it, by the way. They outright did that mechanic with your pets. You know, you could have them. You could have two Pokemon against each other. But other than that, you know, it's just Japanese companies. Like I said, Dragon Warriors Monster Rancher, which I actually loved a lot more than Pokemon, because unlike Pokemon, they actually built on the mechanic. And that's one of the things I don't like about Pokemon, and why I don't get excited when there's a Pokemon game out. Oh, it's a new Pokemon. Oh, it's the same damn thing over and over again. Except, oh, look, you can use two Pokemon now instead of one. Big whoop. You know?
Oh, look, they invented a new way to throw my Pokemon in the trash.
If you can't if you can't copyright a game mechanic, then how do you get the concept of a game in your loading screen as copyright?
That's not a game mechanic.
There would probably have to be some sort of technical patent behind it.
Yeah, it's a technical patent, not a gameplay mechanic.
Yeah. They were basically saying to people like Konami and other people who made arcade games, hey, you can't put those games in between your loading screens. That's our thing.
Fortunately, it's expired, I believe, so you'll see more of it if they want to do it. So fortunately, that's expired.
Jonah, Konami doesn't make games anymore.
No, they don't.
Let
me cry over all the fallen IPs that they don't make anymore.
You can find those IPs. You just have to find them in pachinko machines in Japan.
You know, Square Enix is doing Konami better than Konami in terms of games. I mean, like I said, Resident Evil 7.
Thinking of Castlevania and Suikoden, sorry.
Paul, did you play the Resident Evil games?
I did not.
Okay, just wondering. Because I know you had a wide range of genres on the old consoles. I was wondering if that was one of them.
It unfortunately was not. I've never really been in for anything horror, really, except movies. But that's mostly because they end up being cheesy.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the new Resident Evil has that, like, that level of cheese. But it's also just, like, terrifying hillbilly horror.
Yeah, it's last house on the left, Paul. That's basically what this game is. With a supernatural bent, obviously, because it's Resident Evil, but it's basically Last House on... It's a Wes Craven game.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, teacher.
Okay. $5 million.
There's a big difference between $5 million and $500 million. One of them is half a billion.
Cut that out. Take two. $500 million awarded to ZeniMax in lawsuit over the Oculus Rift from GameSpot. ZeniMax Media has been awarded $500 million in its lawsuit against Oculus, which alleged that virtual reality technology it owns was stolen and used to develop the Oculus Rift. The company had been seeking $4 billion in punitive damages. The trial began in January and saw high-profile appearances from the likes of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg.
By the way, when they say January, they mean January 2016, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. Following several days of deliberations, a jury found Oculus liable of copyright and trademark infringement, as well as having breached a ZeniMax non-disclosure agreement. It was cleared on claims of trade secret theft and unfair competition. Facebook was found not liable, while Oculus is responsible for $250 million of the $500 million owed to ZeniMax. The two companies weren't the only defendants. Oculus executives were also named and have been found liable. Former Oculus CEO Brendan Uribe, who recently stepped down for a different role, owes $150 million for trademark infringement, while founder Palmer Luckey and CTO John Carmack each owe $50 million. Notably, Carmack is a former ZeniMax employee.
Well, guess who made John Carmack their bitch? I wonder if – and they're going to suck it down too.
Yeah. A key issue in the case was whether work Carmack had done at ZeniMax enabled the creation of the Oculus Rift. ZeniMax, as you'd suspect, believes it did and argued that code used to power the Oculus features indications it stems from the ZeniMax work. According to Law 360, Carmack and others claim none of the code he worked on at ZeniMax was used in the version of the Rift that existed when Facebook bought Oculus. Carmack did admit to having a copied emails and source code from his time at ZeniMax, but claimed the code he wrote, Carmack did admit to having copied emails and source code from his time at ZeniMax, but claimed he wrote new code while at Oculus. ZeniMax also alleged that Palmer demoed VR games created by Carmack in the early days of Oculus's existence, and that these helped make it possible for the company to be founded. The case dates back to 2014 when ZeniMax first filed suit. Last year, it added Carmack and Uribe to the list of defendants with more specific allegations. Oculus has consistently stated that the case has no merit.
Well, apparently it does. And, you know, Palmer Luckey can suck my cock. It couldn't happen to a worse guy or a better guy. It's Carmack. So, yeah, that's a big chunk of change, even though they wanted four. Oh, by the way, $4 billion was the amount I think Facebook paid for Oculus, no?
Yeah, they did. They bought it, and now I guess it's a little awkward.
Paul, any commentary? Well, here's a question for you, Paul. Is it possible for you to work on a code at one company and be able to create an all-new code that does the same thing in a relatively short period of time?
I think there would be issues, definitely, because I work at a company that has proprietary software. Like, there's AutoCAD. That's the program we use, but we have a special plugin for AutoCAD that's just for us. And if I went to another company and tried to emulate it, I would definitely get in trouble because that plugin is copyright for my company. So that would definitely be frowned on.
That was Paul, by the way. He was barking. Paul, how about you from your perspective?
I don't know. You'd have a bit of a time proving it, but you know, it kind of goes. It would start. My initial question would be, you know, does it do this thing the same, or does it do it better, or more importantly, does it do it 30% differently?
So wait, 30% is the cutoff there, Paul?
30% is the industry standard cutoff as far as you know, changing. You know, copying artwork, for example. So that's oftentimes why you see character knockoffs or spoofs in different colors, because that's considered to be 30% different.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, TJ. I know you wanted to say something.
I mean, man. when it comes to Paul Merlucky, I could care less. John Carmack is... I don't know. Because we're talking about the same John Carmack that helped found id, right?
Yeah, and Ironstorm.
So I've been following John Carmack's work for most of my life, and it's just on that regard, it just sort of sucks to see something like that. I mean, if he did it, and there's nothing to say he shouldn't be punished about it.
Here's the thing, though. He doesn't have the great corporate sense. I mean, the entire thing about Ion Storm was that most of the money that they did was to this high-rise building with these great, you know, window things and all that stuff. Oh, we're also making a game. Okay. Which is why it wasn't Ion Storm. What was it? It was Ion Storm Austin and Ion Storm something else. The Ion Storm that did Daikatana was just collapsed immediately, you know. While the other Iron Storm did Deus Ex, and we all know what happened with that.
Yeah.
But the Iron Storm that did Deus Ex had nothing to do with John Carmack in terms of providing a corporate, you know, providing a thing. Because here's the thing, programmers, if you want to really, they need darker environments. They don't want bright light. They're like gremlins. Bright light.
Yeah, I mean, John Carmack was always just sort of the technical guy. He was never the businessman in that situation. And I think if you've jumped on a computer game in the last like 30 years, chances are you've played something that John Carmack had influenced in some way.
Or not, actually. I mean,
yeah. And so in that regard, I kind of feel bad because I love John Carmack. I love his work. I'm faithful to the stuff that he's done over the ages. And,
so John,
but if you messed up, you messed up, and that's the way it goes.
So John Carmack made you his bitch, TJ, huh?
I suppose.
For those who don't get that line, it's the infamous advertisement for Daikatana, which said in blood red, in a blood red thing with black letters, John Carmack is about to make you his bitch. Suck it down.
Oh, jeez.
When you said ID, do you mean ID software that made Doom?
Yeah,
yes.
That is.
The makers of Doom? Okay.
And the thing is that, yeah, everybody who paid for Daikatana felt like they were made his bitch too, but not in the way he wanted. I played it. Yeah. Robotic frogs in the very first level, he lost me. And it wasn't just that. It was just very badly made, and it had the worst escort ever, because the escorts had really dumb The escorts had really dumb AI, and if they died, that's it, game over. And they would just run into people's, and they would kill themselves going through doors sometimes. So, yeah.
That sounds like James Bond, GoldenEye, where you get in escort missions and they would walk in front of you as you're shooting at the enemy.
They would just get stuck in doors and you'd have to shoot them to get through. Anyways.
Yeah, but for stuff like, for everything like Daikatana, you had the stuff that was like, you know, they tried to make a PC version of Mario, and Mario said, hey, no, stop. And so they went ahead, they turned it into, called?
Commander Keen.
Commander Keen. And that created the PC platformer.
You know, that was even before all that was Jumpman. How dare you forget
Jumpman. Oh, I remember Jumpman
and Captain Kong. And one thing that people don't know is Jumpman, the stick figure jumper, actually, that is Mario. That is Donkey Kong was literally a sequel to Jumpman. And that's why he was never called Mario in those games. He was called Jumpman originally in Donkey Kong. That was his name.
I know, Minor 49er reminded me of more of Mario than Jumpman, because Jumpman had like a jump pack. You can do like a double jump or something like that.
Well, Minor 2049, you had to paint the ground. And by the way, I completed that game on the Commodore, on the ColecoVision, which was the most complete version. Was it? No, it was, obviously the C64 version was the most complete version. I completed it. It had all 11 levels, and most things only had 6 or 8 or 9 levels. That one had 11 levels.
It made me memorize the song My Darling Clementine.
Wow.
What? It played that was its theme song.
I know. It's by the way, Minor 2049 was also the first multi-platform game. It was the first game that was released for everything. The ZX, the Spectrum, everything. If there was a platform, the Tandy, if there was a platform, there was a version of Minor 2049 for it. That was the first time someone said, hey, let's try this multi-platform. And it's like, whoa, this made money? Because you released it on several systems? Well, guess what? Third party, because here's the thing. Remember, Activision only did 2,600 games. Activision only did, Electronic Arts, you know, all that. And then Minor 2049 came out. And suddenly they realized, well, you know what? We can make this on multiple platforms. We'll make more money. And that's the first time you had multi-platform. So, Paul, any last words on this item?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. So the final last sad item. Asheron's Call comes to a quiet end after 17 years. And this customer is from PC Gamer. By the way, Asheron's Call was originally a Microsoft game. Then they sold it, I believe, to Warner Brothers. The end of Asheron's Call was not climactic. There was no epic battle, no apocalyptic finales, and no perfectly timed jumps to Lightspeed. Instead, Asheron's Call ended with a somber gathering of thousands mourning the loss of the game they had invested years of their lives into. Huddled together in the streets of their favorite towns or around landmarks that would soon cease to exist, they took pictures and said goodbye one last time. Some players like Julian Blackheart, the 74-year-old grandfather who had been playing since 1999, decided not to show up at all. He told PC Gamer, I said my goodbyes. That's where it's all going to end, I think. Others like Maggie the Jack Cat returned to say one final farewell. After quitting years earlier. She had always imagined that one day she'd return to play Asheron's Call with her son when he was old enough, and in the final 2 weeks, she managed to do just that. She said, I always thought that I would take my kid back on one day, and he'd start playing it. So I took him through the town I grew up in and took him hunting. One of her friends, Captain Justice, even took her son out on a few quests. As I was saying goodnight to my friends in the game, she said, he was sitting there rubbing my back because he knew how sad it was that our game was going away forever. Insanely Corrupted is one player who always drifted back to Asheron's Call over the years. When he learned that the game would be ending back in December, he helped start a community-wide movement to petition Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment to find an alternative that would allow them to play. Being a father, he didn't always get to spend as much time in the game as he'd like, and wouldn't be able to see its final moments for himself. Instead, his goodbye happened the night before. He said, "I'm going to do the same thing I did the first time I started playing it. I'm going to sit down at my computer, make a brand new character, have a glass of vodka next to me, and just enjoy it." Twitch streamer Loud Lou was there for the last moments as he pled for people not to forget the memories and relationships they made over the last 17 years. Warner Brothers pulled the plug, and in an instant, the forums that the players had gathered on for decades vanished, the website disappeared, and soon the game would too. As the chat window filled up with goodbyes, one by one, characters raised their arms to the sky as the pink energy enshrouded them, and then, just like that, they were gone. Moments later, each player was booted from the server with a message, "The connection to the server has been lost." And that's how 17 years of history vanished in just a day.
Aww. That's really sad. And yet another game can't play. Gone into the ether.
Yeah, I mean... it's really upsetting. I can't imagine spending that much time on a game and then one day it's like, you can't play this anymore. And not because you don't have it, it's because it doesn't work.
You think that's bad? How about when the majority of your career is like that?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
What do you think about this guy who started playing Asheron's Call when he was 70, when he was 57, and he stuck out of the entire... Because Asheron's Call was released in 1999, so this guy, Julian, he's a 74-year-old, he started when he was 57. And it's like he was there from beginning to end. Well, not quite. Like I said, he couldn't stomach going back. So I think he's the wisest of all not to be there when the server is shut off. Just, you know, say goodbye and... just not watch the death itself.
There is on good old games. You can get the Myst Uru game. I remember that was a MMO, but it's like Uru, and it's just this empty landscape because you're only on by yourself. So that just seems even more macabre. It's like walking around a ghost town
or a graveyard. Kind
of yeah,
graveyard. Or City of Heroes after World of Warcraft came out.
Well, no, yeah. Paul, here's the thing. City of Heroes was still making a profit. But as it said, they didn't
have... It was a joke, Jonah. Let it go.
Okay.
It's not funny when you explain it.
But here, it's not funny when you realize it was making a profit, but NCSoft said, well, it's not playing in Korea, and it's not making a big enough profit, so out it goes.
I understood the joke, Paul. I'm sorry,
Thank
Jonah
you.
Did.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, Asheron's Call originally was Microsoft's big entry into the MMO market, and you know it was one of the first games to have the dynamic events. Like one time they had a gigantic version of one of the dwarves come out of the sea, just a rampage, and it was like a huge event. You know, like you didn't have that in MMOs in which you had developers making events happen in game, because you know a lot of MMOs up to then were very static. You know, this is here, this is here, this is here, this is here, and that's all. Everything you see is what you get. There's nothing that you don't see that you're not going to get, right? So that was the first time that you had the developers actually interacting with the gamers in the game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can look at it this way. Asheron's Call lasted longer than Asheron's Call 2, its first run.
You know, a game is still out there. The original EverQuest is still out there, and it's had what 60 expansions by now, or something ridiculous.
Good lord!
Like that. It's had and it's still getting new expansions, which proves, you know what? These old MMOs, they do have fans, and they will pay to stay in it. I mean, I don't know what the population of EverQuest is. It can't be that much, but you have loyal fans, and that's why you have something like City of Titans, which is which is a Kickstarter project that was successful to remake with some of the things scratched off City of Heroes, except they call it City of Titans. And it's on private servers. I don't know if it'll ever be released as a major thing, but at least the people who backed it are playing on those little private servers, you know, and they're having their fun.
Oh, this is funny. Asheron's Call actually lived long enough to see Asheron's Call 2 die twice.
Wow.
You know it's still out there? Ultima Online. Ultima Online is still there. And that was the first of the official MMOs. I mean, there's always been muds and mushes, but Ultima Online is still out there, and that was from 1995, which would make it 22 years old now. So, anyways, like I said, it's depressing. I mean, even the game, even the MMOs that didn't have that much of a population still had their really ardent fans, like the Matrix Online, which wasn't a very good MMO, but you still had people who were really into it and still and playing it, you know. Of course, do I have to mention, remember the original Xbox Live? It was being kept alive just for a few people who refused to turn off their Halo 2. When there was one left, well, that's when it got shut off. Because you're not playing with anybody, you know. It's like, but for a very long, people who were cheering them on for 2 months. These people kept on playing the longest multiplayer match ever. Cause, just because they didn't want to lose their Halo 2, what's it called, experiences. So, Paul, did you quit City of Heroes when it was before it was officially closed?
Yeah, I'd kind of already moved on to other things.
Okay. On the other hand, you have to say this: how many games do you play 17 years in a row? I think
not many.
I think they got their money's worth. I mean, I could point at something like, say, Grim Fandango, the original. I mean, I've played that on and off. I mean, it's not an MMO, but since 98, so.
I would say Civilization for me, definitely.
The original from 1992?
All the whole series, yes.
I'm saying, do you Civ actually 1. Play the original Civ 1?
Yes, I played Civ 1, yes.
I mean, do you still play that version?
I don't have it, so I can't. But,
I was cleaning my room, and guess what I found? I found a Civ 2 box. And inside the Civ 2 box was a Civ 1 box. And inside both were the full manuals.
I thought you were going to say, like, inside that was, like, the tiny little Tooth Kingdom from that episode of the Civ.
I wouldn't have been surprised, Paul. I would not have been surprised had there been the Tooth Kingdom or the thing that was taken from Twilight Zone. But I will say, I also had the 3.5-inch floppies in there, and for the original Civilization, the 5.25-inch floppy.
Original Civilization I had on 3.5, but yeah, we don't even use discs anymore. We're barely using CDs.
No, it came with both, though. My copy of Civ 1 came with both the 5.25 and the 3.5, because they were considerate that way. Oh, you don't have a 3.5-inch floppy drive yet? Well, we have it for your old ass 5.25-inch floppy. It didn't take that much room either, I don't think.
I remember when games used to do that.
Yeah. Well, when the 3.5-inch ones came out, yeah. When the drives, remember, they were 1.44 gigabytes because it used both sides. So, anyways, thanks for coming back, Paul, for this special 10th anniversary episode.
Anytime.
So,
been great having you on.
Yeah, so
anytime you have a 10th anniversary celebration, you just let me know and I'll be back.
Well, you know, the Video Game Roundtable is still on 288. No, it's going to be 289, so the 300th episode of that is coming up soon. So, Paul, relate your – what's it called? I'm going to be cutting all this stuff off. Just talk about what it was like doing the podcast for the years that you were doing it on a regular basis.
Let's see. What was it like? Well, connections –
don't say like being a dentist. Don't say – it was like having a root canal.
Well, connection speeds were a lot slower back then. Although I will say that Jonah's sense of humor has remained exactly the same, for better or for worse.
I think you meant worse there. I was wondering if one of those two would say, "Wait, what sense of humor?"
I swear, you could go back 10 years and hear the exact same jokes from Jonah, exclusively.
Yeah. But seriously, did you enjoy talking about the industry that you've devoted your life to?
Of course I did. Why wouldn't I? Yeah.
I mean, we've been there through the pain and suffering for Paul, not because of me, but because of certain stupid things that have happened along that way. And I remember doing that podcast, quote-unquote, live from E3, and he was just full of bitter and bile at some of the stuff that was going on. It made for a great episode, too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
See, right there. When Paul gets upset, he's at his best.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, come on, Paul. Just one last... Well, not one last time, but just say it. You know, it's not my job to raise your kids.
Oh, it is so not my job to raise people's kids.
They're your fucking kids.
Well, I mean... Parents have responsibilities to raise their children as they see fit.
Right.
How am I supposed to know how somebody sees fit to raise their child? I'm not a mind reader.
And also,
yeah, Paul wants to be an entertainer, not a surrogate nanny.
Paul wants to be employed. Stop putting words in his mouth.
And your other famous phrase, well, not your favorite phrase, is quoting a good game is good. Oh, wait, you know it better than me. A bad game is bad forever, or a late game is bad. Oh.
Oh, a late game is only late until it's released. A bad game is bad forever.
Yeah, and I wish a lot of more people would listen to that piece of advice, because that advice is ignored now. Especially
with we just patch it. We'll just patch it later. We'll just patch it. Yeah, we'll just patch it.
Day one patches are there's a special place in hell for Paul for those who release day one patches.
I don't know why you think I'm such a hateful person, Jonah.
Oh, no. You're an all-loving person, but there are things that just, you know... Well, hey, wait. You're the one who wants hate letters. Wait, back up. You're the one who said he wanted hate letters.
Yes. That this way I will know that I've said something important enough that people will disagree with me.
So everybody, write your hate love letters.
He's just too agreeable.
Yeah.
I know. I'm working on it.
Well, how about you, TJ? Your experience with the podcast?
You came to me when you were still doing work at Game Watcher, and you know, I just gotten a fancy ass new mic. It was a new year. I think it was actually at the beginning of 2016. We didn't know that the year was going to be the worst ever, but we went ahead into it anyways, and. And here I am in 2017, and I've enjoyed my time here. We've talked about a bunch of fun stuff, and I always like sharing my opinions. I'm a writer, of course I like sharing my opinions, and not always the ones that people like.
Yeah, Joe, it's called Stockholm Syndrome.
And Scott, basically you entered when Dan was unable to do the podcast anymore, and you were... podcast co-host on the Polycast, and the Turncast. Let's shout those out for now, which you're still doing, yes. By the way. It's not like you stopped doing those.
Right. I'm still doing those, and I was for a little while. I was just a listener. I would write in to you guys because I was just enjoyed listening and wanted to talk about video games and share my own opinions and perspectives. And it's been really enjoyable to be on the show and being able to verbally share my opinions and perspectives
and agree with Paul.
Video games.
The unfortunate thing is we lost one of our letter writers.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can't write letters to yourself saying, well, you know, I made an important point, but I've changed my mind. Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Or actually, it's like, Scott has the worst opinion ever from Scott. So anyways, it has been, you know, a great 10 years of which I've spent 7 of them on this podcast. And Paul has spent, oh, God, I think 4 or 5. I'm not sure. I know he was basically just... When Video Game Roundtable merged with Gaming Podcast, he was just along for the ride.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but Paul was the most important podcast co-host that I've had.
Aww, now you're just trying to get me to come back.
Man, what am I even doing here?
Well, TJ, I haven't told you to go away. Neither you, Scott. So you're both important, but Paul, what's it called? Paul was the one I've had the most. Me and Paul have a great byplay, and the thing is, we're kind of rusty. I mean, give us a few episodes if we do it, and We'd be trading barbs like we used to. Right now, mm-hmm.
Right now I keep serving them up at you, and you just let them hit you in the face. What's going on, Jonah?
I'm nostalgic. It's been a while, and I'm still running on nostalgia. Anyways, so to conclude, this is going to be a mess to edit. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. Enjoy feedback, so leave us in our comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And Paul's at Stager Monkey.
And you're still at Paul, if I remember, you said that you were thinking about changing your Twitter handle.
I said I was thinking about it.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't say I had enough motivation.
I was just wondering if
about it.
I was actually wondering if you had changed it yet, because you've been too busy to make any tweets at all.
Oh, I've been too busy to do anything, Jonah. I'm living out of boxes over here, man.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for Paul to say I have no souls. It's not an episode until he says that.
Oh, I think I can get Paul to say that. Hey, Paul, there was an episode where Jonah said that Zelda and Diablo were the exact same game.
And now I can't speak to either of you. Him for stating the lie and you for repeating it.
I said no such thing.
You did. You're like, you go to villages and you go into dungeons of the same game. And I'm like, what?
No, I never said that. What? Diablo's a roguelike. Diablo's a roguelike.
Yeah,
it's
and
not a roguelike.
Zelda's an adventure game, and whole mood is totally different.
But I will say is I have to ask Paul this question. Paul, what if Zelda had Minecraft-style gameplay included in it, in which you could build a house and all that stuff and affect the environment?
I'd be fantastically bored.
Okay. So
that's just me.
We never asked the obvious of you, Paul. Your thoughts on how Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is looking?
Well, there's a reason you didn't ask me that, Jonah, because I wouldn't have an answer for you. I'm still on media blackout.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Paul is the sort of person who, if he's really interested in a game, he will shut it out because
he knows he's going to buy it regardless.
Yeah. But, here's a question you're going to ask. Are you going to buy it for the Wii U or for the Switch?
I don't know. Depends on if they've made a good enough case for me to switch over.
Ha! Ha! I'd rather fight than switch. for those who don't know, that was the old Virginia Slims logo. I'd rather fight than switch, meaning I'm addicted to nicotine and there's no way I'm going to ever be able to... See, that was a new one, Paul, you see? Right there. I never talked about cigarettes on this podcast ever. Anyways, we will see you next week, aside from Paul, who has teaching to do. He has to influence young minds.
Yes, I do.
Oh, here's a question.
Wait for the best.
Before we go out, Paul, what is the most important thing that you want to impart to your students? Because that's something I didn't ask you.
I don't know. I'll have to think about that when I get back to you.
Okay. Anyways, we will mostly all see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's still good advice.
There we go. That's what I was waiting for. But you still didn't say I have no soul.
Perfect.
You didn't say I had no soul, though. That's the disappointing part.
You're just going to have to try harder next time.